This is Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891, ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Talk Back Gardening. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning, Deb, and good morning, listeners.
We're going to go back to basics with a bit of advice from you this morning, Sophie, to prepare for summer ahead.
Absolutely. And while some people might, you know, be wondering when summer's going to come because, you know, they've had a lot of rain, it doesn't matter. We want to keep that rain in the soil and we want to help our plants get through the summer to come.
Absolutely. So we'll talk about that very, very shortly. We'd love to hear from you on 1300 222 891 if you've got a question for Sophie. If you've got a comment to make, send it through on the text line 0467 922 891. Getting lots of rain totals, 18 millimetres from Chris in Morfitt Vale, 38 millimetres from Kim at Scott Creek, Crofers rain, 47 millimetres overnight, 140 for November, 875 for the year so far, says Ron. And Jim says 18 millimetres for Onkaparinga Hills. So we'll get some more of those when we can this morning. I've also got some ABC gardening magazines to give away later in the program if you'd like to prepare for that. When you hear us ask you to call, if you're going to do it by the text line, we need your full name and postal address as well. Well, let's jump onto the phones. Carol is in Lenswood. Now, Carol, welcome to the program. You have a rhododendron question.
I do. I've got a question about pruning my rhododendron. Mm-hmm. I planted it about 20 years ago and it's been growing well. It's planted underneath a big pine tree about 5 metres away from the pine tree, and the rhododendron is about 4 metres in height. Mm-hmm. The lower 3 metres would be quite bushy, but the top, then there's a gap of about a metre, and then there's a spindly bit up the top that's about a metre. I just don't like the shape of it. I think it could be a better shape, but it flowers really well and it's growing quite well. And I've never pruned a rhodo before.
Okay, well, you certainly can prune. And, you know, as with everything, you prune after flowering. How long ago did it finish flowering, though?
It's just finishing now.
It's just
looking at it now.
Okay.
It flowered profusely and there's just a new bit of growth just starting to come now.
Okay, so now's the time to prune. And rather than take, so are you wanting to take the spindly bit off the top and also bring the sides in, or just the top?
No, I reckon taking the top off would really improve the shape, but I think also bringing it in just generally around might also add to the shape.
Yeah, okay. So I would definitely take the top off. Now, the thing is, depending how much sun that gets, right? So if, you know, even though that it's near the pine that's giving it shelter, if it's only getting morning sun, great. If it's getting afternoon sun, when you take the top off, it might be a little bit susceptible to sunburn. Does it get much sun or only morning sun?
That's a good comment. It gets a lot of shade from the pine tree. It will get morning sunlight, but it's up against a big hill, so it gets a lot of afternoon shade. So it's really well protected in regards to afternoon.
Okay. Well, so then you can definitely prune it.
I've also removed a gum tree recently, so it will get a little bit more light, which will be good for it, but it won't be, you know, too much in regards to threat to heat in the afternoon.
Okay, beautiful. So definitely you can prune it. I mean, I remember there were rhododendrons that burned in Ash Wednesday, that's showing my age, and they came back, right? They are remarkably hardy once established, and a 20-year-old one is established. So I would definitely prune the top, and I would do some pruning of the sides, but possibly even sort of flag that for next year, so if that makes sense. And never, so when you prune the top, you know, it'll look a bit ugly from above, but you're not going to see that. If out of the blue we got something like a 35-degree week, which I don't think we're likely to, shortly after you prune and suddenly some of that new growth up the top is exposed to sun that hasn't been getting it, there are products which are called anti-transparents that you can spray on new foliage and it will stop them burning. But it sounds like you know, the reality is that your rhododendron is in a sheltered position, so it's not going to be a problem.
What about fertiliser this time of the year?
Oh, absolutely. Did it get a feed in spring?
It's never had a feed in its whole life, but it's flourished.
Okay, well, you know, you are in an area of the hills that has a beautiful climate and, you know, not bad soil. So I would chuck a bit of organic-based acid soil fertiliser on it because we're wanting it to put on new growth. And, you know, I would also give it a little bit of, well, you probably don't need to, but as we go through summer, because you've got a plant trying to put on new growth, you know, be mindful of a bit of water every now and again.
Thanks very much, Carol. Now, we have got Matt in Norwood and Andrew in Myland, both with mulching questions, Sophie, and that is the very topic you wanted to talk about. So give us a bit of general advice first, then we'll hear what Matt and Andrew have specific questions about.
Absolutely, because what I've noticed as I've been driving around, a lot of people over the last couple of years have got a bit, oh, you know, mulching, that's another expense. I don't really need to do it. And I think they've forgotten why mulching is so important. So let's go back to basics. Why do we mulch? Well, it cuts your watering by 70%, which is absolutely profound. So, you know, basically it holds the moisture in the soil. If you have soil exposed to the air, it will dry out. The other thing it does is it insulates the soil to protect the life in the soil. So we go to all this trouble of improving our soil so we get worms and we've got all these amazing microbes in the soil. If you leave that exposed, they will disappear. You know, I have measured on good veggie garden soil, so this was very rich in organic matter and it was a dark colour, I've measured 61 degrees on the top of that soil when it didn't have mulch on it. And that means that I'd done all that work and I'd wiped out the life in it or the life leaves. The other thing that's really important is mulch smothers existing weeds and reduces weed seed germination. Now, I'll put a proviso on that. If you've got tough weeds like couch and kikuyu, mulch alone is not going to do it. But for, you know, winter grasses and purslanes and all these other things, if you can weed and then put mulch down, it's going to save you time. But there's a bit of confusion about the difference between compost and mulch. Mulch needs to be coarse. Compost is fine. If you put compost on the top of your soil and leave it, it actually works in reverse, you know, it works the opposite of mulch. It will dry your soil out. So what happens is when you have a little bit of rain, it gets absorbed in the compost layer and never makes its way down to the soil. Also, wind passing over the compost wicks moisture out of the soil, out to the air, and finally, weed seeds. Just think compost is seed raising mix. So we use compost and then we cover it with mulch. So that's the important thing. So I think I got all of that out.
Okay.
That was pretty intense.
It was intense. Now let's see if that's helped Matt in Norwood. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Deb. Good morning, Sophie. Great fundamental advice there, Sophie. I was loving that. Big fan of mulching.
Awesome.
My question is relating to the preparation of a garden bed to replant a passion fruit vine.
Yep.
So given everything that you've just described, you know, we would probably start off by putting in, you know, mixing in a bit of compost material into the garden bed.
Yep.
Excuse me. And then, you know, we'd put the vine in and then we'd put maybe a layer of mulch over the top of it and maybe leave a bit of an open ring around the stem of the vine.
Yep.
What can we expect to happen given we've got some heavy rains coming in overnight and some heavy winds tomorrow as well? Would that kind of weather make any difference to that process of putting in a plant like that?
No, as long as you've got good drainage. Now, I'm just going to go back a step. Passion fruit, you don't want to just add a bit of compost. You want to add a lot of good stuff, right? So passion fruit are gross feeders. And if you remember, in the old days, everyone would put something like a sheep's liver in the bottom of the, you know, the hole. Or if you're near the river, you would put a – please excuse my dogs, someone's turning up. If you live near the river, you'd get a carp and you'd put it in the bottom of the hole. Or in rural areas, I know some people do a bit of roadkill in the bottom of the hole. Now, in Norwood, you're not going to have any of those readily available. So no. I would be wanting to make sure you've put a lot of goodness in that hole.
Sure. So what about some dynamic lifter or something like that?
Perfect. Yeah. Perfect. Okay. Pelletized organic fertilizer, a lot of that. And then I would plant – now, when you dig your hole, if your soil is a clay base, I want you to to put water in the bottom of the hole and see what happens. If that water hangs around, you need to get some gypsum in there. If the water disappears, great. You know, you can plant your passion fruit, but if the water hangs around and actually it's hanging around for a couple of hours and it doesn't seem to be moving, you need to make sure the drainage is good. The fact that, you know, if you've improved the drainage and we get heavy rain, that's fine. If you've got poor drainage and we get heavy rain, that's not so good. But the fact you put mulch on the top is actually ideal, because when the heavy rain hits, the mulch is like a buffer, really, or a baffle. You know, it means that the water's not going to disrupt all that soil and wash stuff away. It's actually going to get caught in the mulch and settle down.
Yeah, well, that was my concern, that you know, depending if it wasn't such a coarse type of mulch, it might just get washed away in the, you know, well, by the rain. But
It shouldn't. It should actually work in reverse if it's coarse enough.
Yeah, okay. All right. Wonderful. Thanks, Sophie.
All the best with that, Matt. And one last thing about mulches, and this is for Matt and other listeners. So there are broadly different types. We've got living mulch, which is like ground covers. Then we've got inorganic mulch, which is like, you know, gravel or stones. That's sometimes used in fire-prone areas. And then we have organic mulches. Now, organic mulches are either woody, like bark stuff, or they're straw-based. Now, if you're going to buy it, buy woody-based mulches for woody plants. So anything that's a perennial, you know, so trees, roses, passion fruit, prefer a woody-based mulch. Anything that's an annual, like veggies, which are only going to live for a short time, they prefer a straw-based mulch.
Okay, thanks very much. Andrew from Mile End has also got a mulching question. Hi, Andrew.
Good morning, Deb and Sophie. Sophie, you've answered all my questions, but how thick... I was just going to throw some compost on top instead of raking away the mulch.
Yep.
Because the soil I had fitted about 18 months ago was a sandy loam mulch compost mix, and that's going well.
Yep.
Thick do I keep the mulch on top of the ground for the roses?
Okay, so this is woody mulch or straw-based mulch?
Woody mulch.
Okay, so what I'd love you to do, and this is a pain, right, is to actually, if you're going to put compost on, I would scratch the mulch back and put compost on and then scratch the mulch back on top. And basically, depending on the weight of the mulch determines the thickness. So, for example, I'm mulching in preparation for a new veggie garden area, so I'm putting straw-based mulch on in biscuits, right, and that doesn't matter because it's light. When you go to put... you know, a thick layer of a heavier mulch on, you could actually end up with problems, and you could end up with collar rot. So you tend to pull it away from the trunk of plants. So in terms of a thickness, you know, it might be that you have a couple of centimetres of woody-based mulch. But if it's a young plant, you would want to keep that away from the trunk of your plant. So that sounds a bit vague, and it is, because ultimately, you know, common sense. I do remember years ago someone said to me that they said, oh, I mulched heavily, and I asked them what heavily was, and it was 30 centimetres, and she killed her plants with collar rot, you know, because it was a woody mulch. That's too heavy. So we're talking about, you know, 2 to 5 centimetres depending on the size of the plant and the thickness and heaviness of the mulch.
That's great. All I have to do is top it up then.
Yeah, absolutely. Good on you.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call, Andrew. The number is 1300 222 891. Sophie, just a few texts on composting and mulch. Rachel in the Southern Hills says, compost, exactly what happened to my rhubarb last year. Applied lots of homemade compost, then didn't get time to put the pea straw mulch on, and the rhubarb dried out badly.
Yeah,
so it's the
absolutely.
Two things, yeah. And Kylie, who's listening in Toowoomba in Queensland, thanks for listening, Kylie, says
Hello, Kylie. I know Kylie.
Oh, right.
I can picture her smiling face.
Oh, lovely. Says, your comment about mulch not being useful to stop couch grass in gardens. Yep. Guess what I'm doing right now in our front garden beds? Plenty of expletives about the couch grass. Thanks, Kylie. Shirley in Wyala, I'm sorry to hear this, says, we have a 2 metre hedge of grevillea. It was deliberately set on fire by vandals. That's awful. I'm sorry to hear that. The flames were at least 20 feet high. All the mulch burnt and a tiny tinge of discoloration on one branch of the grevillea was the only damage. Shirley, that's at least a happy ending to hear from that.
Amazing.
Yeah, so sorry to hear that. But thanks very much for letting us know, and lots of people saying thanks for the tips, Sophie. Really appreciate that on compost. Rosalind is in Unley. Now, Rosalind, you've got some yellowing leaves on your Morea. Welcome.
Hello, good morning. Yes, I do. I've got a hedge of them, a row of them, well established.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in the house 3 years, and I'm just noticing now a lot of yellow leaves. The veins stay green for a while,
okay.
and the body's yellow, and then eventually they go almost all yellow.
Okay, and when did this start, Rosalind?
I don't know. I really only noticed this November.
Okay.
Maybe last year a bit. It's a newish garden, and I've only just sort of gotten around to these plants.
Yeah. Okay. So Morayas are the most beautiful thing. They call them a jessamine. They're not a jasmine, but they have this heavenly perfume. If I lived in Adelaide, where it's frost-free, I would have hedges of them everywhere because I just love them. But they are subtropical. So sometimes in a cold, wet year, they can go a bit yellowish if they're hungry, right? Now, you know, they're a subtropical. They come from better soils than what we naturally have. So I would just try with, you know, let's not overcomplicate this. Let's just start with a general purpose fertilizer. How long since they've been fed, Rosalind?
A long time.
Okay. So a general purpose pelletized organic fertilizer. Put it on and just see if they start to green up. They could just be generally hungry. The only other thing, when you said they've got darker green veins, that can be a bit of what we call lime-induced chlorosis. Now, that happens, say, if you use something that's alkaline. So say if someone did some rendering or concreting nearby and someone washed the wheelbarrow, which has got lime in it, near your plants, it can cause the soil to become too alkaline and the plants wouldn't like it. Has any building work or anything, you know, with lime happened anywhere nearby them?
No.
No, okay.
Not in the 3 years that I've been
okay.
here.
Okay, so if they were green and healthy before, let's just start with a general purpose fertilizer and see what happens. So Morayas are subtropical, so they don't particularly like our winter. So as we're warming up now, I think you'll find that they will green up. It's whether they green up enough. If they're still showing some mineral deficiencies, you might need to apply some trace elements. But, you know, put some on now. Take a photo of the foliage now so you've got something to measure it by, and look again in a month to 6 weeks. Organic fertilizer takes that long to be available, well, to make a difference, and see if they've started to green up.
All right, that's great. There is one interesting thing about this hedge. It's, I don't know how many plants there are, quite maybe five on one side and five on the other. The one that's on the very end, which gets more shade, is completely green and has no yellow leaves. And yet the plants all next to it have got loads of yellow leaves.
Is it getting watered, or has it? Have you got heavy soil? So have you got heavy soil that gets a bit waterlogged?
Not that I've ever noticed. Not really. No,
okay.
This seems like ordinary Adelaide soil.
Okay, we could drive
tree,
around.
I'll just say this tree, the bush that's the one that hasn't gone green, and I've noticed this over time that it is always much darker green. But I thought it was because it was getting less sun. It's also next to a very big old kaffir lime tree.
Yep.
I don't know if that
okay,
makes
so,
any difference.
So
to the soil.
Morayas, well, not necessarily. Morayas are, you know, really tough in full sun. I know you know, 20, 30 years ago when they started to become commonplace as hedges, I was sceptical on whether they would cope with our full sun and heat, and yet they love it. So we could drive anywhere around the eastern suburbs and find magnificent hedges in full sun. So they certainly are sun tolerant. There must be something else happening. So whether, you know, and without seeing it, you know, there's something causing those other plants to get hungrier. Whether the ones that are yellow are closer to another sort of tree, you know, a gum tree, which is robbing nutrients from them. So start with a general feed and just see how they respond, Rosalind.
Okay.
Great. Thanks, Rosalind, for calling in. 1-300-222-891 is the number if you would like to speak to Sophie. You'll get onto her fairly quickly. And a big reminder to you that the Indoor Jungle Photo Competition ends at close of business on Monday, the 1st of December. So whether you've got a single indoor plant or if you've got an indoor jungle, Sophie and I want to see your one photograph, the best photograph you can, of one of your plants that you love or a collection of plants that you love and why you love them in 40 words or less. The best photograph will win the beautiful book, The Plant Book, The Ultimate Guide to Thriving Houseplants by Gardening Australia's Tammy Huynh, who we spoke to a couple of weeks ago. If you'd like to catch up with that episode on indoor plants, please make sure you listen to Talkback Gardening via the ABC Listen app. You can always access that in our podcast. And runners-up are going to receive a package of back issues of ABC Gardening Australia and ABC Organic Gardener magazine. So lots to go around, but just make sure that you take that photo, send your best one in to us by close of business on Monday. So have a look around this weekend and then email it. Don't text it, email it to adelaideweekends@abc.net.au. And if you hadn't had a chance to get all of that information down, don't worry, just put indoor jungle photo competition or indoor jungle ABC Radio Adelaide and it will bring up all of the information for you right there. And we'll announce the winners in next Saturday's Talkback Gardening on the 6th of December. So that's going to be exciting, Sophie. I'm looking forward to that.
Absolutely.
This is Talkback Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891 ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Jocelyn from Mount Barker joins us with a question of something you'd like to get rid of. Jocelyn, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, Jockey.
Good morning. Hi there. I have wandering dew.
Uh-huh.
And I would like to get rid of that and plant another ground cover that is beneficial.
So, great idea. The thing, wandering dew is one of those old-fashioned weeds that you find in older gardens, and it can be a bit of a smotherer, but it is possible to get it out. But the thing is, you've got to make sure you get every little bit out. If you leave even a node, it'll come back. But sometimes you can almost get it where it's sort of you start to roll it and it's like rolling up a quilt. You know, you can actually get it out quite well. So depending, I'm assuming this is in the shade, is it?
I know. East facing sun morning and
okay.
Then it goes in the shade, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, so if it's east-facing, you know, you could, if you want something that's beneficial, you could even try some corriers there. There are some lovely ground cover type corriers that are going to bring in, you know, birds and things like that. That could be quite lovely. If you want a bit of perfume, not necessarily beneficial to wildlife, but beneficial to you, I love the ground cover form of the star jasmine, which is the perfume is just heavenly on and off for 6 months of the year. You know, there are lots of other beautiful ground covers that are shade tolerant. You know, there are there's an Australian native ajuga, for example, called a bugle flower, which has tall spikes of, you know, violet blue flowers. That's really pretty. You see it growing up, you know, in quite extreme places in the Flinders, yet it will take semi-shade in Adelaide, and that's just beautiful. So number one thing is to get rid of the wandering dew, and once you think you've removed it all, give it a month. I know you'll probably be desperate to plant. Give it a month because I'm sure you'll find other little bits come up, and it's far easier to get rid of it while there's nothing else growing than have it come up amongst things.
Yes. Is it an idea to put the black plastic?
I would actually physically remove it, you know, find a young, muscly friend to get in there and physically remove as much as you can. And because it's east-facing, black plastic is not going to be as effective as if it was, you know, which is solarisation, is not going to be as effective as if it was in full sun.
Got you. Okay.
Great.
Good Thank luck you. With that.
Yeah. Bye.
Thanks, Jocelyn. 1-300-222-891. If you'd like to jump in the queue to speak to Sophie Thompson this morning. If you've got a comment, we love your comments on the text line, which is 0467-922-891. Michelle's in Port Norlunga with a potting question. Hi, Michelle.
Hello. Good morning.
How can we help you?
Hi. I have a red centre lime, which is kind of healthy and not healthy, and then a bit healthy and then not healthy in a pot. And I'd like to put it into a bigger pot, thinking it might grow better. Just wondering your ideas on how to go about that.
Oh, first off, you know, can I just check, in the pot, where was the pot positioned?
It is facing north. Yep, kind of on the
full
corner
sun?
of a pergola. Yeah, pretty much full sun. It probably gets
and how
in shade.
Oh, okay. And how often do you water it in that pot?
It's on an automatic watering system, so it had been getting watered every couple of days, and now it's getting watered every day.
Okay, good. Because I was going to say, in a you know a plant in a pot doesn't have the capacity, even though it's you know. Related to an Australian native lime, it doesn't have the capacity to seek moisture further afield. So in a pot, you probably do want to be watering daily. How big is the plant and how big is the pot? I mean, you don't want to overpot citrus. That's what I'm just wondering about.
Okay, so it's probably about 40 centimetres high, and it's in a pot that's 40 centimetres diameter by 65 centimetres, so it's a deep pot.
Okay, so it's already in a big pot. I would be inclined to and what have you been feeding it with?
I probably haven't been regular enough. I've been giving it some blood and bone, and I've also put in some sort of pellets, but they're not, I can't remember the name of the pellets.
Are they a seaweed-based plant tonic pellet?
No, but when it was starting to look unhealthy, I was putting in some seaweed-based plant, just liquid fertiliser.
Okay, so I'm just going to suggest, I spent a couple of times with Ian Tolley in the last week, and so, Ian is promoting that when plants are not well, first off, plants in citrus should be fed monthly with a pelletised organic fertiliser. So as a sort of tonic, there is a seaweed-based plant tonic in pelletized form. So I would be getting that and putting that on monthly and just seeing if it helps. And then there is also an organic citrus-based fertilizer, fruit tree-based fertilizer that is organic too. And you could give it a dose of that to help, you know, green it up and then do the other one monthly. But Ian talks about feeding monthly. And so I would say you've actually got quite a big pot for a fairly small plant. Potting it on isn't necessarily going to help it. So, you know, look at nutrition. Sounds like you're doing everything else right. Look at nutrition and, you know, again, take a photo of the foliage now and then look at the photo, say, in 6 to 8 weeks. And often you'll go, oh, wow, it has actually greened up. You know, it's heading in the right direction. As long as you've got good drainage, you know, it'll be fine in that pot.
Thank you very much, Michelle. Good luck with that. Call in to speak to Sophie on 1-300-222-891.
This is Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891, ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning. Welcome to Talk Back Gardening. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning, Deb. Good morning, listeners.
We have got lots of callers waiting to talk to you, Sophie. If you'd like to join us as well, call in on 1300 222 891. If you'd like to make a comment, I'm having trouble getting to them because we've got so many callers, but please give it a go on 0467 922 891. Greg says, my garden aches, A-C-H-E-S. Ants, cats, harlequins and earwigs. Craig, I'm sorry to hear that. But if you'd like to speak to Sophie, give us a call. I've got a couple of ABC Gardening magazines to give away, one by phone and one by text. So if you'd like to get ready for that, then please put your full name and your postal address on your text line, ready to go, but wait for the queue to call and Emma will give one of those away. But let's jump straight into Talk Back Gardening now and welcome Kathy from Joslyn, who has a tree daisy question. Welcome, Kathy.
Thank you. Hi, Deb and Sophie. I have a tree daisy which is probably at least 15 years old, and it would be easily 3 metres high. I have to prune it because otherwise it gets too high.
Yeah.
But I don't want to cut off the flowers. So when is the latest that I can keep pruning so that it won't affect the flowering?
Okay, so generally, so tree daisies are Montanoa and they are amazing, and generally they prune them after flowering and then you can cut them down hard. So when you've pruned it in the past, have you done that sort of thing after flowering, or you just sort of trim the outside?
No, look, I have pruned it quite heavily, but then I keep pinching it out to make it bushy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, so I know what you mean.
Just straight to the top. You know, and I want flowers at face level, basically.
Yeah. So because they flower late in autumn, so they're a bit like tree dahlias, I would think that you should be able to go till the end of the year quite successfully. But I'm not actually sure about that question, Kathy. I think I would, I'm going to handball this one to a nursery that grows several different sorts of the tree daisies. And that's Tupelo Grove Nursery up at Milor, which is probably where you bought it from in the beginning.
Yes.
And see if they know how late you can do that. So that's also what people do with tree dahlias, so they don't get quite so high. Once the plants get to about a metre high, they nip the tips out of them and then they become bushier and more solid and less wind susceptible. So I think I'd ring Tupelo and find out when the latest is. With tree dahlias, I only know people that have – generally people do it when they're about a metre. So and that's not quite yet. So I think you'd have till the end of the year quite successfully.
Okay, terrific. Thanks
all
so
the
much
best
for
that, Kathy. A beautiful plant and lovely to hear when people people have special plants. If you don't know what a tree daisy is, the Adelaide Botanic Gardens, now I haven't seen these for a couple of years, but they're as you walk in, the main gate's off North Terrace and you turn right and you walk down to the Friendship pillars that are next to the lake. There's a beautiful little gazebo which you do, you know, you can play chess in and things like that. And then there's an avenue of Montanoas that go down to that lake and absolutely spectacular in autumn when they're flowering.
Oh, wonderful, Kathy. Thank you for bringing that to our attention. If you'd like to call in on 1300 222 891, we'll get through as many calls as we can. Libby is in Marion and has a soil preparation question ready for summer. Hi, Libby.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. Libby, how can we help you?
I'm sorry, I missed a bit of your soil prep for summer, and I'm not much of a gardener. I'm a bit of a novice, and I've got a row of hedges, lily pili and some viburnums, and I want to know if I put the soil, it does get very dry here, if I put the, should I put a layer of compost on first?
That would be ideal, ideal. And you don't have to work that through. So the thing with compost, you know, we're talking a couple of centimetres. What we're doing, when you put compost on and mulch on top, the worms will work it through for you, okay?
Okay.
Really what the compost is doing, it's increasing the organic matter, it's increasing the soil life, in there. Yeah. And then, you know, the better, the healthier the soil, the healthier your plants will be. So you don't have to work it through. And so just, you know, a layer, a centimetre or so of compost, depending how much you've got, and then your mulch on top.
So I can do them both at the same time.
Absolutely. And, you know,
delivered by the trailer load, I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah, beautiful. That would be perfect. Good on you.
And I had some yellowing on my lily pilly hedge, and I have been putting mixing a heavy base nitrogen, not heavy base, but more nitrogen rich fertilizer, and just sprinkling that on them.
I tend to only ever go for balance things because it's a bit like you saying, look, I'm iron deficient. I'm only going to take iron tablets, you know, instead of having a balanced diet. So I tend not to do anything like that. Now, lily pilly is also, if anything, are better with a native plant fertilizer.
Right.
And so, you know, if it's helped, great. But I would tend to put an organic based fertilizer on suitable for your plants. So, you know, a fertilizer, organic pelletized fertilizer. Suitable for native plants. And if you put that on with the compost and the mulch on top, that's all going to break down slowly and feed the microbes in the soil. And it's the microbes in the soil that make the nutrients available to the plants. So if your lily pilly was going yellowy, either it's, you know, either it's hungry or it's been put in an area where the soil's a bit alkaline and you might just need to correct that. So I tend to go for general fertilizers that are balanced. It's like you're putting a smorgasbord on and the plant goes, oh, I want that, and it takes what it wants.
All right, brilliant. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Libby.
All the best for that.
1-300-222-891. Mandy is in Vista. Now, Mandy's got a crepe myrtle question. Hi, Mandy.
Oh, hi. Good morning. Yeah, Sophie, thanks for answering my email. I'm the lady that got her garden totally vandalized.
Yeah, totally devastating.
Oh, it was like a tractor had gone through it. Everything's gone. But there's a couple of things I think I might be able to save. John Hall was kind enough to come down and have a look at the garden, and he said, nah, you're whistling in the wind, because a tall crepe myrtle about 4 metres tall snapped completely, and it was like hanging down and with a thumbnail size of bark, but it didn't die. Like, I was watching it over a few days and I thought, the leaves are still alive. So I've bought all these 2.4-metre star droppers and hammered them in against a long thing, and I've taped it up with electrical tape and then tied it to this really tall star dropper, and the leaves still haven't died. I mean, is that a miracle? Is that going to live?
Okay, so it sounds like it's going to live, because otherwise the leaves would have died. We've had a few hot days since that happened. But can I say that there could be a weakness there for the future? So what I would also be encouraging is, sometimes a trauma like this will cause your plant to become more bushy down low. So I'd be encouraging lots of other growth to come. It might have been a single trunk crepe myrtle before. Well, if it becomes a multi-trunk one, they're still spectacular. As a matter of fact, I prefer multi-trunk trees, multi-trunk specimens of crepe myrtles to the single trunk ones. So it sounds like it will live and it will heal. Just be careful. If there's other shoots coming from below, encourage those too. Just leave them grow and let them do their thing, because that join may or may not be as stable in the long term.
Mandy, I'm sorry to hear that happened. Thank you very much for calling in, and best of success to you in dealing with that. Sandra is in Tailem Bend. Now, Sandra, you've got a Dracaena in the ground. How's it going?
Good. It's reached the top of the funnel, the courtyard, and it's got a shade cloth roof, and I want to cut it off to about 3 foot high. The stem should shoot out new side shoots, but I want to know what I cut off. Can I plant that in again, and will that get roots?
Okay. So from what you're talking about, this is there are lots of different Dracaenas. So this is one called Marginata.
It's a green one.
Yep.
And it's got the thick, you know, the big woody trunk, it looks like. It's quite thick and around. And
yeah.
It's got about, yes, and a nice lot of leaves. Well, it's shot out about three times around the top of the trunk and it's got all these nice leaves on it.
Yeah,
but it's
okay.
Reached the top of the roof.
Yep. So how big, how long are these pieces that you're going to cut off? How long are they going to be?
Well, probably if I cut it off and I leave it about 3 foot high, I'll have another probably 4 foot stem for the plant.
Okay. So I think 4 foot cuttings are too long, okay? I don't know that they're going to take. But the you know how you cut off the top and it's got those little sort of side branches? They would be what I'd be propagating. I'd still try with a thicker trunk, but I would mainly go for the side branches and put them in. And put them in premium potting mix and, you know, do all the right things and they should shoot. The trunk may shoot, but I'm less optimistic about that one.
But the trunk that I'll leave in the ground, that will reach. That will reshoot.
That'll be fine. Absolutely. So, you know, obviously make sure you water them and everything like that. Yeah.
In the courtyard with a lot of other tropical gear.
Yeah.
Yeah,
good luck. Well, good luck with that. So you know, it sounds like you've got a green thumb and the perfect position for this plant.
Okay, thank you very much. When will I do it? As soon as it warms up a bit, or now would be all right.
I reckon now would be great. You don't want to wait till it's too hot. Now would be a great time.
Oh, great question. Thanks, Sandra. Appreciate your call. Thank you for your many rain records. We're running out of time to get through them all, but I've absorbed them very well. Looks like we've had great rains around the place. Some not getting the rain when they want them, like this text is saying, most hay baled in our area, but harvest has come to a stop after 22 millimetres yesterday. And thanks for this text. We planted out about 100 natives in our front paddock to revegetate it in Barossa Goldfields, and we live in a rain shadow. Do we mulch them or is it best not to? Well, with natives, what's your answer on mulching with natives, Sophie?
Well, mulching with natives will actually mean that that water that fell last night will stay in the ground. So if you can do, I've planted 3,000 native tubes and I haven't mulched them just because the capacity for me to do that on that scale is too hard. But I know that if there was something, what happens is the soil, if it's just exposed, it just wicks moisture up. So, you know, even sometimes they call it brushing where they get, you know, trimmings from other plants and they put them around your plant, anything like that is of benefit.
Okay. And thank you very much to this texter who says, having not barely a bloom from the climbing roses allowed to grow vertically, laid them over like cane pruned grapevines and have got stacks of blooms from the forced lateral growth. Happy days despite the incredibly wet spring in Woodside. And thank you for that photograph. Lovely to hear from you. And this texter saying how we love Sophie's laugh. It's so down to earth and genuine. So much enthusiasm for gardening is incredibly inspiring. Couldn't agree more, and we get it every Saturday. So if you'd like to get some inspiration, call in now on 1300 222 891. Sophie, a reminder as well, our indoor jungle photographic competition closes this Monday, close of business. Whether you've got a single plant or a whole stack of beautiful indoor plants like a jungle, we want the one best photograph of your indoor greenery and why you love it in 40 words or less if you can. The best photograph will win the beautiful book, The Plant Book, The Ultimate Guide to Thriving Houseplants by Gardening Australia's Tammy Huynh. And runners-up will receive a package of back issues of ABC Gardening Australia and ABC Organic Gardener magazines. So we need your name, your postal address, your telephone number, and it needs to be in by close of business on Monday, the 1st of December. Just please email it to adelaideweekends@abc.net.au and we'll announce the winners next Saturday the 6th. Speaking of magazines, if you haven't won anything from the ABC, and that's any ABC, in the last month and you'd like to win a magazine, we'll give one away by phone on 1300 222 891 and one away by text. We need your full postal address and your full name, please, to 0467 922 891.
This is Talkback Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891, ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Let us go to the phones now. We've got Peter from Boolaroo. Oh, Peter, haven't heard from Peter for ages. Hi, Peter. Not a good reason you're calling, though.
I've got white ants in some of my fruit trees. It's been a constant challenge for years. And, this year I've lost a couple of younger trees. And someone suggested that because they're under stress a bit more last year, they become more vulnerable to white ant attack. But I'm just wondering whether there's anything I can put in the soil that will deter them from encroaching.
Echidnas.
Echidnas. I haven't got any of those.
Well, I didn't know if you'd get them up your way, Peter. That's a really interesting one. Ultimately, whenever plants get attacked by anything, it's because they're under stress. And so if you can keep, last year was the driest year on record for many parts, and I'm sure, it was tough for you. So whether, when you know you've got a year like that, whether you can actually just encourage plant health with water, even if you've got it, and, keeping plants in optimal health, the healthier the soil, the healthier the plant. And so, even seaweed-based plant tonics, when we know we're going into a drought year, can make a huge difference on keeping plants from stressing. But I don't know anything else. I mean, the stuff they treat white ants with is not necessarily very healthy for the soil. So I'm not sure of an organic treatment. I mean, I know they do, you can do, they put sacrificial timber in places which the ants go to instead of going to your house. And then if they see activity, then they monitor and find the nest. But I'm not really sure what to say for you, Peter. It might be something that just ask locals around what they do, but understand that a lot of that stuff, if you put it on, it's going to kill the life in the soil, which is keeping your plants healthy. So it's that balancing act yet again.
Yes, then I'd be more concerned that it'd get absorbed by the tree and come up into the fruit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So whether, don't like moist soil. So, it comes down to the bedier soil, organic matter, the healthier your soil, ants shouldn't be living there. So if you can focus your water use around their roots, theoretically they won't like to be there.
Yeah, all right. Just quickly, I've got some seedling apricots have come up in a compost. What's the chances of getting a good apricot tree? Fairly remote?
No, fairly high. Stone fruit is actually, peaches and nectarines, very good chance. Apricots also a pretty good chance. So I would definitely, and the good thing about stone fruit is they fruit in a couple of years. So you haven't got to wait 10 years to find out if it's good or not. So yeah, definitely I'd be keeping it.
Where I've lost a couple of fruit trees, I'll replace them with try an apricot that's come
beautiful.
Up this year.
Beautiful. No good on all you, right. Peter. No worries. Great. Thanks, to hear Rocky. From you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Peter. Ian is in Farrell Flat. And Ian, you have got a question retaking cuttings from a lemon verbena. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm just wondering about taking cuttings, whether I go into brown hardwood or just tip cuttings or just, I don't know, green cuttings or from new stuff. Yeah.
Well, Ian, at this time of year, I would be doing new cuttings, but it's that new green growth that's hardened off. If you take it when the new green growth is really soft, often it will just wilt. So go out and take a green cutting. The other thing I'd be trying to do is I'd be trying to get a bit with a heel. So, when you get the side branching on lemon verbena, I'd be pulling a bit off with a heel. Put it in water and see what it does. My plant, I reckon it would have hardened up enough at the moment. But if you were talking to me in October, a month or more ago, I think they would have been too soft.
Yes. Okay. So I'll try the heel bit and see. Put it in water. You reckon?
No. I would definitely use That was just really to see if it's hardened off enough. But oh, no, okay. You know, if you're doing cuttings, if you go, no, this wood is perfect, it's not too soft, I would use honey or a rooting striking powder and put it into soil. And, you know, lemon verbena, there is nothing like it. I've got one near the path so that as I walk past, I can just rub my hands on it and you feel energized immediately.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Good on you, and a lovely place.
Thank you.
Farrell Flat. I've looked at the painting on the silo there looking for the baby elephant and never found it.
Never found it. Not many people do.
Maybe one time I'm up there, you can tell me where it is.
Thanks, Ian.
Thanks.
Bit of local knowledge there. Appreciate that.
So, you know, when you go around and you see all these amazing painted silos, often they have a story. And Farrell Flat has an elephant story because there was once a train that went through that had a circus and a baby elephant got lost. And apparently it's in the painting somewhere. This is the urban myth of Farrell Flat.
Ah.
And, of course, people that don't know where Farrell Flat is, it's not far out of Burrah. There's some beautiful gardens in Farrell Flat. So worth visiting if ever there's open gardens in Burrah. Often there'll be some in Farrell Flat.
We just had a text through on the issue of termite treatments. This texter says modern termite treatments inhibit chitin formation, which results in the colony dying as they can't form an exoskeleton, doesn't threaten plants, but it must be from a licensed professional exterminator.
So it's not, I'm not worried about it so much threatening the plants. It's what it's going to do to the soil. It's going to, you know, if it affects termites, you know, are we affecting all the other microbes in the soil?
Right. The other
and
animals.
The other critters. So, you know, if it's a, that's a really good question.
Congratulations to our magazine winners this morning, Craig in Bellevue Heights and Madge in Salisbury. Those will be coming out to you very shortly. And just another reminder, just you've only got 3 days to get your indoor jungle photograph in. So have a look around this weekend at your favourite plant. Take the best shot you can. Take a few. It is a photographic competition. Send it through to us at Adelaide Weekends at abc.net.au. If you'd like to find out the details, it's just easy. Just type in indoor jungle photographic competition or indoor jungle ABC Radio Adelaide and it will take you to the competition page that's got everything there that you need. But it's only one entry per person, so make sure that you send your best one through. And then you and I got a bit of work to do, Sophie, before next Saturday in judging the winners. I think we'll have at least five. So the top winner will win the plant book, The Ultimate Guide in Thriving Houseplants by Gardening Australia's Tammy Huynh, and I'll make up some runners-up prizes as well of back issues of ABC Gardening Australia and ABC Organic Gardener magazines, which never really go out of fashion because they are seasonal. So you can just keep them and return to them as well. I mean, obviously, you want to buy it every month to get the latest news, but there's always stuff that's in those that will be of benefit to you no matter when you read it. Sophie, I know that you'll be in the garden all weekend, as you always are.
Well, I am when I'm home, so I'm excited about being home this weekend. It'll be lots of fun. And I'm going to be in Manham for the local gardeners on Monday. And I'll look forward to catching our listeners again next weekend.
Wonderful. Well, you enjoy doing your composting and mulching, as you've been advising us to do. And while we can, ahead of the weather, and look forward to catching you next week, Sophie.
Absolutely. Happy gardening to all our listeners.